Back then, it was nothing but displays. Everything was just on display. You could had little ladders you could climb up and look in the cab, and they hand out brochures and had a gift shop and old wooden baggage cars for the display car. There were people that just liked to show people the trains and talk about the past, which is good. They kept what we do have.
We knew the museum was sort of dying out. I think we got down to like 25 members at one time. I understood why it was the most boring thing in the world to have that museum open on every weekend. And all we did, we put a little fare box out front. So hopefully people put pennies and nickels in it to do what? Just go and look at all this rust and equipment. So, that wasn't going to do. Later on, when I got to be president, we went to everybody we could find that was a member or not a member of the museum and asked them what would it take to get you to come back and be a member and be active. And it was almost unanimous that everyone said, well, if 152 could just, boy, if it could ever be restored to run again, that, boy, I would love that and I'd be active and all.
When I joined the Railroad Museum, I detected that there was a groundswell with some of the members to get 152 back in service.
Most of the museum people before the younger group, like myself, Carl, and Paul, and David, and that group, we were younger. We were in our 30s. We decided we wanted something operating, so it just kept snowballing.
This was a younger set, and they were always being frustrated by the older groups in the Kentucky Railway Museum. Well, we can't do that. We'd get in a lot of trouble if we tried to do that.
We talked a lot about, what would it take to get the museum back alive again? And of course, we always was hoping it would be 152 getting restored. So we started looking into the possibilities of that. We were very naive as far as what we thought it would take. And
hold your head just like